Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Will Quinn, on this 30th of January 2010, taking you to the next 60 minutes as I discuss the world of sports. I'll begin with the end of one of the strangest and just craziest sports careers, maybe of all time, and that's, of course, the retirement of one Kurt Warner, who came in. You know, you go back to that preseason, and it seems like it was just yesterday, but back in 99, he's on the team with the Rams. Trent Green is slated to be the starting quarterback. Green, who Dick Vermeil absolutely loved, goes down the preseason, tears his knee up. Dick Vermeil, you know, is basically in shambles at the press conference, crying and, you know, just heartbroken. I mean, he feels obviously awful for Trent Green. And all of a sudden, here comes this guy out of the Arena League, who had been a star in the Arena League, have been on, you know, in a couple of training camps, in terms of Green Bay, 28 years old, and he comes onto the scene, first full year starting, and has a year unlike any other, as far as a guy who nobody had ever heard of. Nobody. I mean, because, you know, Sports Illustrated had covered, like, who is this guy? And he, you know, leads the Rams to a Super Bowl, wins the MVP. Wins the MVP of the NFL, and begins, you know, and that was the beginning of the start of just a career that, again, I've never seen a career like Kurt Warner's. You know, you're talking about a guy who, you know, two-time MVP, you know, has over 200 career touchdowns, has 30,000 yards, great postseason record, really great in the playoffs, but had 5 years. You know, after that great start to his career with the Rams, you know, after they lose, you know, when they lost the Super Bowl to New England, had 5 years where you forgot that he was even basically in the NFL. I mean, you look at his 2000 years from 2002 to 2006 with the Rams and with the Giants. I mean, he was just the Giants and then the Cardinals at the beginning. When they clearly wanted Lyons to be the starting quarterback, Warner was 8-23 and had a quarterback rating of 82. Okay. 8-23 with a quarterback rating of 82. Started off his career with the Rams, you know, those first 3 years, 99-01, he was 35-8. Went to the Super Bowl twice, lost once, of course, to the Patriots, and, of course, beat the Tennessee Titans in that great game you saw with, of course, the late Stephen Mayer and them two going at it. It's just one of it's amazing. I just said amazing career Warner had. And there was a time before he got to Arizona, despite the fact that he had two MVPs and a Super Bowl MVP under his belt, but I didn't think Warner was a Hall of Famer. I said, there's no way this guy could have 5 missing years where he basically was, you know, just non-existent and be a Hall of Famer. There's no, he can't, he's just not, he hasn't accumulated enough stats. But right now, when you look at his career, look at what he's done and what he did with Arizona, there's absolutely no question that he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, his first ballot Hall of Famer, no, it's just not even, it's not even a discussion. I mean, the guy, you think about it, the guy revitalized 2 franchises. When he got to St. Louis, that team was not, you know, you're talking about, they basically had just traded away a couple of years before that, a guy who's going to be a future Hall of Fame running back in Jerome Bettis. You know, they drafted Lawrence Phillips. You know, that turned out great. They, you know, they really haven't done anything since the Jim Everett, Henry Ellis days back in the, you know, mid-80s, early 90s, when the Rams had some pretty good teams, even made it to a conference championship. Flipper Anderson. Like, once you got past that, the Rams were a joke. And they went through a million quarterbacks, you know, Tony Banks, They went through running back, got the running back. Dick Vermeil comes in. He seems like he was on his last, you know, he seems like he was on his last gasp when before Warner, you know, has his, you know, had to start to his career. But, I think he, you know, he gets that franchise back going. Then he does at Arizona. Arizona, he comes to the Arizona situation where they, in the worst way, wanted Matt Ryan to be the starting quarterback. They did everything they possibly could do to make sure that Matt Ryan was going to be the quarterback of that team. Warner was supposed to come in, not even be a stopgap. He was to come in, you know, show Matt Ryan a couple things, be almost an emergency guy. They did not pick up Kurt Warner to start with any intention of him starting, but he beats out Leinert, and he has, you know, takes him to the Super Bowl last year, and to me, that sealed his, you know, that sealed him in terms of being a Hall of Fame quarterback. Because Arizona, again, they had a couple playoff years, but they have never gotten reached that level ever with that franchise. So you take two franchises to the Super Bowl. You play, you know, you have three of the top passing, you have the three top passing games in Super Bowl history, and you had the one of the great, you know, the second highest quarterback rating of all time behind Steve Young, or the third highest behind Steve Young and Peyton Manning. You know, you're a Hall of Famer. Now, is he an all-time great? Of course, quarterbacks like to overstate it. I mean, we see some ESPN guys say, yeah, he's one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. I'm not going to go that far. You know, he's not Dan Marino. He's not Brett Favre. He's not Joe Montana. He's not Peyton Manning. He's not Elway. I don't think he's even as good as Steve Young. You know, he's somewhere in between that Dan Fouts, you know, Fred talking. I mean, he's somewhere in that group. I don't think he's good. You can't put him up there with, Johnny Unitas. Can't put him up there with those guys. But he is all up in quarterback. And it's going to be very interesting now to see what happens with Matt Leinert. I mean, now the path is clear. I know you've heard some rumors about McNabb. I don't see that. I don't think that's going to happen. I know he has a house out there in Arizona. But now, the keys, now Leinert has the keys to the car right now. And you would think Leinert would come in and play decent, considering that, you know, he's had time to sit. You've seen quarterbacks sit and succeed before, whether it be a Carson Palmer, whether it be even a Stephen Mayer. Not too many of these guys are just, not too many guys are just going to come out of nowhere and just start playing great football unless they have a great defense and a great running game to back them up. Case in point, Mark Sanchez and Joe Flacco. And you can also toss in the likes of Ben Roethlisberger too as well. But again, Warner was, Warner was a just tremendous passer of the ball. I mean, accuracy, quick release, he stood in, took the hits, and probably was that last hit he took on an interception that he was trying to make a tackle on, that probably was the last nail in the coffin for him. I think that last hit, and he had a couple concussions before, it's alleged that he's had five concussions, but that last hit, I think that last hit was, that was the end of his career. I think if he doesn't take that hit, he's probably back in 2010. Again, he's walking away from about $12, $11 million. Here's a guy, I can't see him coming back. This is not a guy who, you have a guy that has seven kids. He's involved in a ton of charities. I get a sense that he's pretty much content on his career and where he's at in his life right now. Very spiritual person. I don't see Warner coming back. I think the concussions definitely sealed his fate in terms from that standpoint. 347-215-6180 is your call number. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, underappreciated and underrated, we'll look at the king and queens of tennis, as we go down under at the Australian Open. We'll talk about that. Also, we still have a lot of, we have a ton of NBA news in regards to Gilbert Arenas, NBA All-Star Reserves, and look at the halfway point of the NBA. Everybody's played more than 41 games, and we'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Again, I'm your host, Will Quinn. You can hit me up at, you can hit me up and follow me at twitter.com/WilliamGerald. Here is the update. Arizona quarterback Kurt Warner has decided to call me, has decided to retire after 12 seasons. Warner was a two-time NFL MVP. He led the St. Louis Rams to their only Super Bowl win in Super Bowl 34, where he was named MVP of that game, and also set a record for passing yards with 414 yards. Australian Open Women's Final this morning, I should say, as number one Serena Williams, who is seeking her 12th Grand Slam and 5th Australian Open title, takes on former number one Justine Henin, who is seeking her 8th Grand Slam of her career. And again, the match is on ESPN. It will take place at about 3:30 a.m. So if you're a night out, you might enjoy that one. Henin leads the all-time series. I mean, Williams leads the all-time series 7-6. NBA scores. Just one game going on right now. Charlotte all over Golden State, 110-88, midway through the fourth quarter. Earlier scores. Games completed. Atlanta sweeps Boston for the first time in over 11 years, 100-91. The Lakers over Philadelphia, 99-91. Cleveland gets his 7th straight win with a 94-73 shellacking over the Pacers. Oklahoma snaps Denver's 9-game winning streak with a 101-84. San Antonio 104, Memphis 97, Miami 92, Detroit 65, Minnesota 111, the Clippers 97, the Wizards edge New Jersey 81-79, Houston gets by Portland 104-100. Chicago wins its 5th straight, 108-106 in overtime, and Utah over Sacramento, 101-94. 347-215-6180 is your call number. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Of course, Australian Open taking place around the time of year, around Super Bowl time, that the Australian Open. That the Australian Open also takes part of sports forefront. They're a very small part. Listen, I love tennis, and anybody who has listened to this show knows how much I love tennis, but it is hard to get into this tournament when you have a final being played at 3:30 in the morning. Again, there's nothing you can do about the time difference, nothing the tournament can do. I mean, you have to move the tournament. I mean, it couldn't be played in Australia, and that's not going to happen. They have a great tennis tradition with the likes of, you know, a Rod Laver and what have you, but it is very difficult for that tournament to have any juice. Not only because it was around Super Bowl, sandwiched in with the Super Bowl, but just, I mean, the times are impossible. I mean, you're catching, people are catching replays at around 3:30 in the afternoon when the match has already taken place. And, you know, unless you've been at the Rock, you know what the outcome is. But you have Roger Federer, who, you know, every time he loses a match, whether it be a final or whether it be a non-final, which is very rare, because he's been in the finals of 18 of his last 19 Grand Slam events. You know, we look for ways to basically say he's getting older, he's not as good as he once was. You know, he has young guns chasing him, and we look for an excuse basically to almost put him in retirement. All the guy does is win. I mean, I heard, you know, I'm looking through some stuff at the Australian Open, trying to find out, you know, who the experts like. There's not one guy on ESPN picked Roger Federer to win the tournament. I saw Rafael Nadal, who has some major issues right now. We'll certainly get to him. I saw Andy Roddick as a pick. I saw, you know, Juan Del Potro. And I'm looking, I'll say, You know, Roger Federer is still the number one tennis player in the world. He's still playing at a high level. Is he dominant? No, but he doesn't have to be dominant. He's at a point in his career where he, you know, he can win. He can win with intangibles. He can win with smarts. The guy is still the best tennis player in the world. And to me, the most amazing thing about Federer, when you look at him, is just how consistent he's been, tournament in, tournament out. And listen, when he plays these non-Grand Slam events, I don't pay any attention to it. If he loses, in the third round of the Phoenix Open, I can care less. And tennis is all about the Grand Slams. Nobody cares about non-Grand Slam events in tennis. Maybe golf, you can win some, a couple non-Grand Slam events. As people start talking about you, this guy's getting hot, this woman's getting hot, maybe you'll be a contender for a Grand Slam event. That's not the case in tennis. Tennis is all about the Grand Slams. And Federer in Grand Slam events has been absolutely at his best. An off year for Federer is only winning one Grand Slam in a year. That's an off year. And, I mean, the guy has had a career. He's had a career to me similar to, like, Jack Nicklaus, where, you look at the 15 Grand Slams, you say to yourself, yeah, that's all-time leader in Grand. He's all-time leader in Grand Slam wins. But to me, the number that stands out is the 23 Grand Slam semifinals he's been in. 23 straight Grand Slam semifinals in his career. 23 straight. That he's guaranteed to win at least 5 matches. Again, I equate that to Jack Nicklaus' 19 Grand Slam second place finishes, running up to Grand Slam events. Not the 18 majors, but the 19 second place finishes that he had, because he told you that he was always in contention. And I know Andy Murray, and I certainly want to give Andy Murray some time here, because he's played extremely well. Coming off just a terrible year. After you thought when he played Federer in the 2008 U.S. Open final, beat Nadal in the semifinals, that Murray was trying to win a Grand Slam in 2009. It did not happen, but he's played strong in his tournament. Again, he beat Nadal earlier in his tournament, and finds himself in the finals against Federer. And listen, tennis is a young man's sport. Would you be shocked if he beat Federer, I would. Because this is where Federer is just dominant in these finals. I mean, he's only lost to 2 people in five Grand Slam finals. He's never lost to Australian Open final. And he knows how to take these guys apart. These guys that, again, Del Potro picked him off. We know what Nadal has done to him in Grand Slam finals. But for the most part, the Andy Murrays of the world, the Andy Grimes of the world, those guys don't beat Roger Federer in Grand Slam finals. They don't do it. I mean, they just don't beat him in Grand Slam finals. He finds a way to win the big points. Andy Murray wants any shot of beating Federer in the final. He better get off to a quick start. He better win the first set. Federer loses the first set, I still have confidence that he can win the match in 4 or 5 sets. Andy Murray loses the first set, forget about it. He's done. There's no way he's winning that match. But again, as a tennis fan, appreciate what you're watching with this guy. You might not ever see an athlete as consistent in any sport once Federer has come and gone. And it looks to me like with Nadal having knee problems, there's no, I mean, he can win 24, 25 Grand Slams. I can see him winning 8 or 9 more Grand Slams. I know that sounds crazy at the age of 28, 29, but who else out there is going to stop him? As far as women go, Serena Williams, to me, again, you can talk about some of the things she's done. The U.S. Open blow-up was an embarrassment. She has a tendency to take a lot of time off. She did a lot of things outside of tennis. You can talk about all that. You can talk about all those things if you want. The bottom line is nobody competes as hard as Serena Williams in tennis, period. I can go male or female. Grand Slam in and Grand Slam out. Serena was finished in that quarterfinal against Azarenka. Finished. She's down a set, down 4-11 the second. Down 4-11 the second set. It's hot. She had 11 grand slams in her pocket. I mean, she could easily just win. You say, you know what? Forget it. I'm in the quarterfinals. I'm not going to get destroyed if I lose this match. She's made enough money, you know, to last. I mean, she has more than enough money. She comes back, wins that match. Barely can move against, barely can move in, her, in the semifinal. Guts out that match, and now finds herself just one win away from another Grand Slam title. She does not get enough credit for getting out those kind of win those kind of matches where she just looks totally out of it. When you say to yourself, there's no way she can win. She's physically laboring. She's, she's as mentally tough as they get in these type of matches. And she's good for two or three of those matches in Grand Slam events a year. She's good. There's no other player that wins matches like that as frequently as she does. No other player in tennis. Definitely not in women's tennis. Maybe, other than maybe Federer with the nails, but not nobody in women's tennis. And she's facing somebody in Justine Henin. I like Henin a lot. I think Henin, other than Serena, has probably been the best player in women's tennis over the last decade or so. Even as good, even better than Venus, because she's won. I think she's been more consistent than Venus. But Henin, this is not the Justine Henin that you saw dominating the French Open and winning some U.S. Opens and playing and being the world's number one, which she once was not too long ago. This is not the same Justine Henin. This Justine Henin, to me, is just not just happy to be here, but you get the sense that this is that she, is excited to be in the final. She'll play hard. They've had some battles. I'll be hard pressed to see Serena Williams lose this match. Like Roger Federer, she's undefeated. In the Australian Open Finals, again 4-0, and again if she was going down, she would have lost in that quarterfinal. That was when she just absolutely could have just folded and just went home. I cannot see her making it this far and losing it to Justine Henin. This is not Justine Henin of 2007 or 2005. Not the same player. She's still very good, but she's not a great player anymore. So we'll see what happens there with the women's final. Again, roughly about 2.5 hours away, and the men's final, of course, on early Sunday morning at, again, 3:30 a.m. And again, it is, last year, a lot of people might not have saw the Rafael Nadal, Roger Federer Classic. 3:30 in the morning. The match started at 3:30, ended at about 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. The people were getting up. The match was still going on. So again, it's going to be a tough sell for tennis. But if you are up, both those matches should be very good. And I expect one of those matches will go the distance. I think I would have to lean towards Federer's match. Probably might have a better chance to go the distance than Venus than Serena and Justine Henin. I can see Serena taking Henin out straight sets, but we shall see. 347-215-6180 is your call number. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We will look into the NBA, busy week for the NBA as far as the All-Star game was concerned. And, of course, a couple of Wizards had their day. We'll talk about that. I also will give you my team of the week, and we'll talk about what to look for come the second half of the season. All teams, again, have played more than 41 games. We'll get into that and much, much more still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. almost halfway home, 12:54 in the a.m. Here is the update. Arizona Cardinal quarterback Kurt Warner has decided to retire after 12 seasons. Warner was a two-time NFL MVP, leading the St. Louis Rams to a Super Bowl win back in the 1999 season. Warner was the MVP of that Super Bowl game, breaking the record for passing yards. Australian Open women's final this morning, Serena Williams will take on the world's number one, will take on unranked Justine Henin, a former number one. Williams is seeking her 12th Grand Slam and her 5th Australian Open title. Henin is seeking her 8th Grand Slam of her career. NBA scores: Atlanta defeats Boston 100-91. Atlanta completes the season sweep of the Celtics. Lakers over Philadelphia 99-91. Cleveland wins their 7th straight game, 94-73. Indiana only had 9 points in the 4th quarter. Oklahoma City destroys Denver 101-84. The Nuggets have their 9-game win streak snapped. San Antonio over Memphis 104-97. Miami 92, Detroit 65. Minnesota 111, the Clippers 97. Washington edges New Jersey 81-79. Houston 104, Portland 100, Chicago 108, New Orleans 106 in overtime, and Utah gets by Sacramento 101-94. You still have one game that's ongoing right as of right now. Charlotte Bobcats are all over Golden State, again late in the fourth quarter, 120-106, about a minute left in that game. Looks like Charlotte is going to get back on the winning track again. Charlotte all over the Golden State, 120-106. Of course, the NBA is at its halfway point, and suddenly, if you're David Stern, you couldn't have loved what you saw this week. First, Stern, of course, suspended Gilbert Arenas and Javaris Crittenden for the rest of the regular season. Again, certainly nobody is shocked about that. And originally, Stern tried to suspend Arenas for all eight, and both of them for all the 82 games. Arenas only ends up getting 50 games, but Stern wanted to suspend him 82 games, but, Players Association, I guess, got Stern to keep the suspension for just the rest of this regular season. And you would have to think, based on that suspension, based on what has transpired, that Gilbert Arenas is finished as a Washington Wizard, and that if you're the Wizards right now, you're basically trying to negotiate a buyout. I mean, that's the only way. Nobody in their right mind is trading for Gilbert Arenas. You cannot keep him on the team. So, again, you negotiate the buyout, allow him to become a free agent this summer, and just cut your losses, basically. I mean, we've all, a lot of us have been there where we bought a car that just didn't get the job done, overspent for it, and had to get rid of it. And that's what the Wizards are going to have to do with Gilbert Arenas. And, and I know there was some talk, and I don't believe this, that I've seen this, possibly would consider that he despises the Wizards so much that he'd consider walking away from $8 million on his contract, or $8 million, please. I want to see that day. You wonder during his meeting with David Stern, he's asking David Stern about the Wizards possibly voiding his contract. David Stern says, "Hey, that's up to the Wizards. That's in their hands, not mine." So there's no way that Gilbert Arenas would ever walk away from $80 million and tell him, keep $80 million, just allow me to become a free agent. Yeah, I mean, please, come on. Let's be realistic for a minute. He's not walking away from that kind of money. Again, if you're a Wizards, you have to negotiate a buyout. You have no choice. You have absolutely no choice. You're not going to recoup the money. There's no way the player association will allow that to happen. There's no way an arbitrator is going to vote on giving that money back. I mean, it's just not. It's not going to happen. So again, their best bet: negotiate a buyout and then move on and try to rebuild that franchise. They need to just break it up right now. Right? I mean, come on, Butler. I mean, I don't know how many people want Antoine Jameson and his $15 million. Come on, Butler. I think is a viable trading option considering that he's, to me, in the prime of his career, and he's still a very good, I think a very good player. He would be great on a contending team. Time to break that team up completely. Also, you had All-Star reserves come out this couple of days ago. And I think for the most part, the general managers and the coach, the general managers did a good job in picking the All-Star reserves. There was one omission that you have to look at and just shake your head at in regards to the Eastern Conference. And this definitely had something to do with the Allen Iverson making, you know, getting voted on by the fans. That definitely impacted this guy being left off. But there's no way Al Horford can be on the team. I mean, you can't have a guy, you know, 13 points, 9 rebounds, 2 assists. He shoots a high percentage of 57, almost 58%. But Al Horford, come on, Al Horford's an All-Star now. First of all, I'm not taking two Atlanta Hawks that were not voted in. That's number one. Joe Johnson, yes. I'm taking one Atlanta Hawk. I'm not taking two Atlanta Hawks, number one. Number two, if I were going to take another Atlanta Hawk, it would have been Josh Smith. But to me, the guy who should be, again, shaking his head, it has to be David Lee. I mean, David Lee has basically been 20-12. I mean, that was a 19.5 points a game and 12 rebounds a game. And I went almost 3.5 assists per game. So I'm basically playing power forward and center. And again, you know, the argument you hear about guys like Lee who's going to make the All-Star is, well, their team's not winning a lot of games. And I'll go back to the point I made last week. This is not the MVP award. It is an All-Star game. The game is about guys who have put up great numbers and it's about almost individual achievement more than it is about team. Please don't make this out to be an All-Star. Too much is being focused on how many games a guy's team wins. It is not about that when it comes to an All-Star game. Not at all. So, to me, David Lee got the stats. He should have been an All-Star. You know, there's no question in my mind he should have been an All-Star. Even on the Knicks. Bottom line is, 20 points is 20 points, and 12 rebounds is 12 rebounds. I mean, there's no getting around those numbers. As far as the Western Conference goes, really no. I thought the coaches did an excellent job picking the reserves. I mean, of course, you have the Whiskey, Durant, Gasol, Chris Paul, Zach Randolph, Darren Williams, and Brandon Roy. Tell me which one of those guys are you taking off? I mean, there are a lot of people complaining that Chauncey Billups, Chris Kaman. Number one, I'll give it to Chris Kaman. Chris Kaman plays for the Clippers. I know he's put them about 20-9, but he plays for the Clippers. I'm just sorry. That's just the way it is. It's like, you know, it's like the scarlet letter, so it's in a way. You have to be averaging 30-15 to make an All-Star team on the Los Angeles Clippers. They are the Clippers. And Chauncey Billups, you know, who are you putting them over? I mean, Chris Paul's throwing up 21-11. You have Darren Williams throwing up basically 19-10, 7 assists. Brandon Roy has single-handedly, before he got injured, kept Portland in the playoff race. Who are you putting Chauncey Billups over in terms of the guards? I know he's playing well. But those three guys, I mean, it's a no-brainer. I mean, it became a numbers game, and, you know, he got squeezed out. My team of the week, the Chicago Bulls. Chicago Bulls are playing great basketball right now. I know you can either say Cleveland, they've won seven straight. But we knew Cleveland was going to be good this year. But Chicago got off to a slow start. Their coach almost was fired. And, you know, he's still, you know, hanging in there like Rasputin. And, they get off to a slow start. Got off to a slow start on this road trip that was seven games. They ended up 5-2. Ironically, losing to two teams that are both below 500 with the Clippers and Golden State. And they're playing well. I mean, they won five straight. They beat Oklahoma. They beat Phoenix. They beat Oklahoma City. They beat Phoenix. They beat San Antonio. They beat Houston. Not easy places to play. Certainly not easy places to play. Tonight, they got by New Orleans, when you thought that they might be tired from a long road trip in a hometown game, the Bulls are going to be pesky in the playoffs. I mean, they're not a legitimate threat. We all know that. But when you have a guy like Derrick experience from last year, you got a guy like Derrick Rose who can dictate tempo and can take over a game. When you have a bench where you can have two guys come off your bench and get you 20, whether it be Brad Miller or John Solomon, that's a pretty good Bulls. A pretty good team. They've played. I've been impressed with them because of just how bad they got, just how bad they started, just the turmoil they were in with the whole Vinny Del Negro's speculation. So again, hard to gauge NBA right now. It is still the dog days of the NBA. I mean, people, you cannot get too excited about it. And not that these games don't count, but for teams like the Lakers, for teams, even the Celtics, who just need to get healthy, it's still very much hard. Even Orlando, some of these teams are just going through the motions. It's still, it's February now. It will be February. I think with the NBA, you really don't get tuned in until March. Now, some teams don't have that long to wait as far as trying to make the playoffs. You know, if you're a Lakers, if you're a Cleveland, the Lakers, you want to get that home court advantage. If you're Boston, you want to definitely be a number two seed and not have the prospects of playing game sevens at Cleveland and also at Orlando. But if there is one wild card as far as the Eastern Conference goes, it would have to be the Atlanta Hawks. Again, I mentioned it on the update. The Atlanta Hawks own the Celtics this year, sweep them. Of course, they played them, took them to seven games, even though game seven was annihilation back in 2008. There are certain matchups that just bother certain teams, and, Atlanta's athleticism, their length, they really annoyed the Celtics to a point where, and I really believe that Atlanta feels like they can beat the Celtics, even in the playoffs. I don't see any fear that Atlanta has of the Boston Celtics. And the funny thing about these conferences, it might be just come down to who plays who. Not so much who's the best team, but who plays who. I don't think Cleveland matches up with Boston. Boston doesn't match up with Atlanta. Atlanta doesn't match up with Orlando. Atlanta doesn't match up with Cleveland. Cleveland, I think, still will have trouble with Orlando. So the Eastern Conference, a lot of Eastern Conference playoffs are going to come down to matchups. A couple of scouts in the Western Conference, I had a surprising thing to say. In regards to who they believe will challenge the Lakers, you figure that they would say either Denver or San Antonio, but at least two NBA scouts, Western Conference scouts, say that the biggest threat to the Lakers are the Dallas Mavericks, which I was kind of surprised to hear. I know Jason Kidd's having a great year. I mean, 36 years old, he's fifth in the league in assists, shooting a high percentage for the three-point range, but I still don't trust Dallas in a big spot. Dallas is something about the team that just bothers me. I still don't think they can come from that 2006 collapse in the NBA Finals. I don't trust them against the Lakers. I still believe to Denver being the biggest threat to the Lakers. I don't think Dallas can win 17 series against the Lakers. I really don't. I think Denver is kind of being overlooked a little bit. I know J.R. Smith has been giving, George Karl headaches, but that's what J.R. Smith does over the course of a long 82-game season. I expect him to get his act together. And I expect, if Denver's healthy with Melo, keeping Melo, Carmelo Anthony, and Chauncey Billups happy, they should be fine. As far as San Antonio goes, I thought San Antonio really was playing well a couple weeks ago. Now, they can't beat anybody. I know they had a decent win against Memphis tonight, but for the most part, San Antonio has not been good. A lot of people around the league think that San Antonio needs to make a move to get a little bit younger and then get some more athleticism. I don't know what San Antonio, do you want to try to go for Stoudemire? Do you really want Stoudemire on your team if you're San Antonio Spurs? What would you have to give up to get him? That's the key. So I don't know if they can get Stoudemire, but they need some young athletic player who can get them 10 to 15 points a game, who can kind of like energize, do what Richard Jefferson has not been doing. Jefferson has been a disaster for the Spurs. You almost forget when he's on the court. You almost forget that he's on the court sometimes. That's how bad he's been. So if you're the Spurs, you cannot be happy with the way that Richard Jefferson has played. 347-215-6180. 347-215-6180. Women return from the update. I'll return to the scene of the crime. The Superdome, New Orleans, Louisiana. Viking fans, you might want to have to cover your ears. We'll look back at last week's conference championships and give you a smidget of a Super Bowl preview. Of course, we have a whole show next week that will break down that game through and through. But I'll give a small little sampling of what I think about next Super Bowl 44. We'll be right back after this update. Arizona quarterback Kurt Warner has decided to retire after 12 seasons. Warner was a two-time NFL MVP and led the St. Louis Rams to a win in Super Bowl 34. Warner is 38 years old and holds in his third all-time in terms of quarterback rating, trailing only Steve Young and Peyton Manning. Australian Open Women's Final. Number one, Serena Williams is seeking her 12th Grand Slam and her fifth Australian Open title as he takes on former world number one Justine Henin, who is trying to win her eighth Grand Slam championship. The match will take place in about roughly another two hours and change on ESPN. NBA scores. Atlanta completes the sweep of Boston. Season sweep of Boston, 100-91. The Lakers over Philadelphia, 99-91. Cleveland wins his seventh straight game, 94-73. Oklahoma City all over Denver, 101-84. Denver's nine-game winning streak is snapped. San Antonio avoids a four-game losing streak of their own. Four-game losing streak by defeating Memphis, 104-97. Miami crushes Detroit, 92-65. Minnesota over the Clippers, 111-97. Washington gets by New Jersey, 81-79. Houston over Portland, 104-100. Chicago gets by New Orleans, 108-106 in overtime. And Utah over Sacramento, 101-94. Also, Charlotte over Golden State, 121-110. 347-215-6180 is your call number. 347-215-6180 is your call number. And, of course, Super Bowl 44 coming take place next week in Miami. Colts and Saints. And both of them certainly had different roles in terms of getting to the game. It's funny about those two games last week. If you did not see the games, you looked at the scores, you would say to yourselves, you know, 30-17, you know, must not have been close. It, you know, expected, you know, Manning must have just destroyed it, which he did. But you know, you expected the Colts were the Colts. And then you just saw the Minnesota New Orleans score. Wow, 31-28, overtime game. Wow, must have been a classic. But you couldn't have, I mean, but the games were absolutely polar opposites as far as that goes. I mean, to me, as a fan, the Jet-Colt game was much more satisfying to watch than the Minnesota-New Orleans game. The minute, you know, in that Jets-Colts game, if you basically Jets-Colts game, and I know I picked the Jets, man, I picked the Jets more on just anti-Colts with the total 16-0, you know, taking a shot. Everybody's picking the Colts. Why not just, you know, go out on a limb and pick the Jets? I thought nobody already picked the Jets but me. And I was wrong, you know, I was wrong, but predictions are predictions. But, you know, you got what you basically expected. I mean, Manny, Masters, Rex Ryan's defense, the Colts threw all over the place. The Jets don't have enough offensive weapons other than a couple of trick plays. They couldn't run the ball. And they lost 30-17. I thought the Jets played pretty well. They were up 17-6 in the game. And I have no problem with the Jets at all. Peyton Manning is Peyton Manning. But the Minnesota New Orleans game, Minnesota, I've never seen two teams as tight as both those teams were. I mean, you're talking about five turnovers from Minnesota. They treated the ball like he was on fire with the fumbles. Brett Favre doing his thing, you know, doing his interception thing that he tended to do in these playoff games at times, even though I did not put that loss on Favre, by the way. I mean, and you had just two teams who, it was like, who, you know, who wanted that game? And you walk away from that game feeling like the best team did not win. And to me, there's no question that Minnesota not only was the best team in that game, but to me, is the best team. You know, a lot of times the best team doesn't win the Super Bowl. And I think that will be the case again this year. I think Minnesota was the best team in football, but they just, you know, they could not handle the pressure of playing, you know, for a franchise, for a city. They could not handle the pressure of just erasing some bad playoff memories, conference championship memories as far as 98 and 2000 goes. And they just buckled under the pressure. I mean, to me, there's no question about it. But New Orleans should feel very fortunate to have won that game. Very fortunate. They did not play well. Again, Minnesota had gift-wrapped that game to New Orleans Saints. And if you're Minnesota, I mean, you better hope that Brett Favre comes back. Because to me, it would be perfect for Favre to come back. I would think the ideal situation for the Vikings in terms of how they deal with their quarterback situation going into the future would be to draft, have Brett Favre come back for 2010, draft a quarterback this year with a second or third round pick, you know, go into 2011, pick up Donovan McNabb, his contract will be up after next year, and in 2012, have the quarterback that you drafted this year ready to play. So you groom him for 2 years, but he's ready to play come 2012. When Favre will be more likely retired, and McNabb will be, you know, older. So I would think that, you know, or if McNabb has an extra year in it, fine. Time another year, you groom that quarterback to come, you know, 2013. So they'll have 3 years where he's learning from Brett Favre and Donovan McNabb. Those are not too bad players to learn how to play the game from. But if Favre leaves, I mean, they are in a tight spot as far as leaves. Philadelphia is not getting rid of McNabb. Unless they win, you know, would Minnesota really give away a first round pick to get McNabb if Favre would retire? I guess they wouldn't have much of a choice, considering that they have a team that's ready to win right now. That team is ready to win right now. And again, that window is quickly closing. quickly closing. As far as the Super Bowl goes, again, it's early. I'm leaning towards one way decisively that I wasn't leaning towards when the game first came about. But I'm leaning towards the decisive direction. I won't give it away. So consider that to be like a week long tease. But I pretty much know where I'm going as far as the Super Bowl is. I think it'll be a high scoring game. I think it'll be there'll be some plays made, but the outcome will not shock me. Put it that way. The Saints are a great story. It's great for the NFL to have them in the Super Bowl, as far as what that city has been through. But we'll see. I mean, Manning clearly is playing for his legacy, and the Colts look like an absolute machine right now with the way they've been playing. Not only so much with Manning, but their defense has been great. Defense only giving up, basically 23 points in the first couple of playoff games. Again, against two limited offenses, but again, that defense is not get enough credit for playing quality football. So we'll see. Again, we'll be all over Super Bowl 44 next week with a special Super Bowl edition of the Saturday morning wake-up call. So stay tuned for that. So we'll be talking about that come next week. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Coming up on the Saturday morning wake-up call, I will close out the show. We'll look at a couple of Nike ads and a golfer, a former Grand Slam winner, says goodbye. So we'll talk about that to wrap up the show on the last segment of the Saturday morning wake up call. Arizona quarterback Kurt Warner has decided to retire after 12 seasons. Warner was a 2-time NFL MVP. He led the St. Louis Rams to a win in Super Bowl 34 back in the 99 season. Warner, of course, was the MVP of that game. And he is third all time in terms of quarterback rating, trailing only Steve Young and Peyton Manning. Australian Open Women's Final, Serena Williams, number one in the world, takes on Justine Henin. Williams is seeking her 12th Grand Slam, her fifth Australian Open, 12th Grand Slam overall, while Henin is seeking her 8th Grand Slam victory overall. NBA scores, Golden State, I'm shattered all over Golden State, 121-110. Atlanta sweeps Boston for the season series, 100-91. Lakers over Sixers, 99-91. Cleveland destroys Indiana, 94-73. They win their 7th straight game. Oklahoma City 101, Denver 84. The Nuggets had their 9-game winning streak snapped. San Antonio 104, Memphis 97. Miami over Detroit 92-65. Minnesota 111, the Clippers 97. Washington 81, the Nets 79. Houston 104, Portland 100. Chicago gets by New Orleans in overtime 108-106. And Utah 101, Sacramento 94. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Chime in, talk about anything you want. Again, Super Bowl coming up next week. Come on, big Cosmic basketball games coming up later on this afternoon. Kansas travels down to Kansas Town down to Manhattan to take on Kansas State. And Kansas State has already beat number one Texas. You have Duke at Georgetown. Georgetown trying to lick his wounds after that shellacking they took earlier in the week by the hands of Syracuse, who's a legitimate national championship contender. So certainly keep eyes on that. USA Today is running, and I'm sure you've seen it if you read USA Today, they're running a section, as far as the NFL goes, is, by position, player of the decade by position. They chose the quarterback position, and they took Brady over Manning. And I don't know if it's just me, but is the decade over yet? I mean, 2009 has the 2009 season been completed yet? I mean, there is still one game to play, And Peyton Manning, you know, let's say Peyton Manning, for argument's sake, wins the Super Bowl. The Colts win the Super Bowl and Peyton Manning's MVP. Would you really take Brady over Manning, considering that Manning destroys Brady as far as yards, as far as stats goes, and you can have just one less Super Bowl and the equal amount of Super Bowl MVPs as Brady? And let's not forget, Brady in that first Super Bowl was not the main reason why Brady won. I mean, that was about his defense, his special teams. That was about Bill Belichick's schemes. Tom Brady basically was a game manager in that first particular year they won Super Bowl back in 2001. Ty Law should have been Super Bowl MVP that year, by the way. But there's no, I mean, I don't know how you judge, how you do that kind of, how you do that award and try to let the NFL season finish out. Especially when the main, I mean, you know, you couldn't hold off another couple of weeks to put the court, to take the quarterback of the decade. Also, Nike running a controversial ad with LeBron and Kobe. If you look on the first page of the Sports Illustrated, of course, it shows Kobe and LeBron, it basically with tire tread, similar to the Adrian Peterson ad that they were, that the NFL, that Nike was running over the course of the NFL season. The big deal is Kobe says, you know, I'll do whatever it takes to win games. I don't leave anything in the chamber. And, you know, with what happened with what's going on with Gilbert Arenas and Jarvis Crittenden, you know, Chamber connected with Gunn. I don't think a 10, 12-year-old is going out there reading this article or reading those words Kobe said and then going to go out there and buy a gun. I mean, to me, that's a bottom line. I don't know how you assess those words with violence. I mean, to me, it's not a big deal. I understand to the extent what the NBA is trying. The NBA, David Stern, wants nothing to do with any small controversy whatsoever, but it's not that serious. I mean, I think we know what Kobe Bryant is talking about. As far, I mean, this is basketball that we're talking about here. Also, John Daly says he's probably more likely calling it quits after missing the cut of this at a Farmers Insurance Open, a tournament I'm sure that everybody's heard of, even the diehard golf fans. And listen, John Daly, the main thing about John Daly for me, and I heard this a while ago, you know, when he was conversing with Tiger Woods, John Daly, you know, basically tied in Tiger Woods, saying, hey, why, you know, why you work out so much and why you practice so hard. And Tiger Woods, and I'll never forget this, when I heard this comment, Tiger Woods says to him, you know, John, if I had your talent, I wouldn't be practicing that hard. I wouldn't have to practice as hard as I practice. I mean, this is Tiger Woods talking about John Daly, talking about basically, you know, John Daly having more talent than himself. Now, you might have overrated that a little bit, but it just goes to show you what big a waste John Daly has been as a professional, as a golfer, through the alcohol and just his own personal struggles. And you forget that he does have two majors. I mean, he does have two British Open. He does have a British Open and a PGA Championship. I mean, you almost forget that this guy is a two-time major championship winner. I mean, Sergio Garcia, for all the flash that he's shown over the course of his career, hasn't won anything, any Grand Slam. And this guy has two major tournaments. Okay, next week, Super Bowl 44. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to have a lot of fun breaking down this game. This should be an exciting game. Should be a lot of scoring. You got the two big quarterbacks. You got Peyton Manning returning to his roots for New Orleans. And Archie Manning to play for the Saints. You got Drew Brees, you know, resurrecting a city with what they done there. Should be so a lot of storylines to chew on. I'm sure media day will be fun on Tuesday. And we'll be looking forward to that, and I'll be back next week to you to preview Super Bowl 44 on the Saturday morning wake up call. Have a great week, and I'll see you soon.